Welcome to the Florida Specifier Podcast. We're thrilled to be with you today. I'm Ryan Matthews, and I'm joined by my co-host, Brett Cyphers. If you like what you hear, and we sure hope you do, and want to support the show, please be sure to hit subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen, and don't forget to leave a five-star rating and review.
And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Florida Specifier online at floridaspecifier.com. The subscriptions and ratings truly make a difference, and we think you'll enjoy all the ways you can read, watch, listen, and learn right at your fingertips.
We can't thank you enough for the support. So, Brett, how you doing today, my friend?
I am doing very well, sir. The girls are back in school as of this morning.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Got a high schooler who's going in as a freshman, so I'm looking forward to hearing how first day of that goes.
Yeah.
And I'm also looking forward to kind of see the light at the end of the dog days of summer tunnel heat, oppressive heat.
You've been through the high school roller coaster with your progeny before.
I have. It's hard for kids today. It seemed much simpler when I was a kid. And you know, I know your kids are a little bit younger. It's like, but you got to be dealing with some of that as well. My wife cried this morning when the freshman went off to school, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. hugged the eighth grader and wouldn't let her go.
We subject our kids to the same picture every year, on the first and last day of school, and they completely hate it at this point, and we rejoice in it.
Now imagine that 4 or 5 years from now, taking that same picture.
Yeah, I mean, I've got an upcoming seventh grader and a fourth grader, so the seventh grader, who's 12, she's like, it's basically mid-eye roll.
Oh, precisely. Other than that, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. We've been traveling this summer, as I know you have too, mostly to professional conferences, mixing in some fun. We're past Marco, so it seems like the arc of the year has at least moved past us, and now we're getting ready to get into the fall, get back into some sort of routine, which is nice.
Yeah, I guess we call these the kind of closing days of conference season, as I would describe it. So you've got the League of Cities is coming up, I think, next week, and I know you do that because you represent everyone.
Not only the League of Cities, the association itself, but about 20 other individual cities.
Of course, sure. Of course. And then we have the newer but mighty Florida Resilience Conference. That's coming up in early September as well. And I consider them batting cleanup, as an old baseball player you could appreciate.
I can. And can you believe it that this is actually their third year of hosting the conference? And there's a lot of chatter on the street. I mean, this is becoming a must-attend event.
Yeah, I'm hearing, I mean, literally a lot about it. I mean, they're sitting in front of us, so it's a little awkward. It's like, I am hearing a lot about the conference, and even for myself, it's like, this will be my first year going, which I'm pretty psyched about, looking at the curriculum, all that kind of stuff. And so yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well. And so, given that we're already doing it, we let these guys shed some light on the secret to its kind of early success.
Now that we've properly inflated their heads, let's get to both Pepperidge and David Rathke. Their organizations are co-hosting the Florida Resilience Conference. Pepper's the president of the Florida Shore and Beach Preservation Association, and David is the executive director of Resiliency Florida. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having
us.
Glad
to be here.
Yeah.
All right. I'm anxious to find out what's on tap for this year's conference. I've been going through the curriculum. Literally, it's stacked up here in front of me as we sit and talk. But I want to start first by kind of separating the two of you into your individual organizations and what they're about first. And so, David, let's start with you. If I think back 5 years ago and someone asked me what resilience was, I might have assumed you're talking about one of really two things: sea level rise and beach renourishment when a hurricane comes through. So start with what resilience is and then move on to your organization's actual mission.
So resilience is a much more than sea level rise. It's coastal flooding, it's energy to make sure that when the hurricane comes through, we're prepared. It's emergency management. It's how you plan your community and protect your critical assets. It's heat. It's got many facets. Mm-hmm. So Resiliency Florida was created 8 or 9 years ago, and Pepper actually will talk about that in a little bit because he was involved in its early days and actually creating the organization when it first started.
Yeah, did I hear correctly? We were talking before we started recording. Did it literally start in my quote finger studio here, meaning my office at Anfield? Is that right?
It literally started right off to my 1 o'clock. There's a table, and it started right there.
I'm going to call that 2 o'clock, but I take your meaning.
Fair. Yeah, 3 o'clock's here.
Okay, we're sitting so on the other side of the room from you, remember?
So,
yeah, Resiliency Florida, we've been around, I think, 9 years now total. We're at 501c4, so we do advocacy work. But we also do public education. When it comes to resilience, we are made up of both local governments and private companies. So if you think about local governments, they're as big as Miami-Dade and as small as the city of Winter Haven. So we've got communities of all size and types, both coastal as well as inland. And then with the private companies, you have smaller engineering firms all the way up to Atkins Realis and WSP. So we have multiple size firms. We also have folks like CMEX and power companies and so just all types of private firms. So, and we're about a 50-50 mix between private and public. Our main mission is to advocate for the mitigation of all of the impacts of the changing climate, if you will.
And I do like the mix of both public and private sector, because I think when you look at the issue itself, and especially the mission that you have in front of you, it's like having those two things joined together. Even when it happens in other cases, it's a little bit of an awkward joining because of the nature of how money is spent in Florida, et cetera. It's like, but with the issues you have out in front of you, it seems like you got to have those people at the same table. Is that kind of the approach?
Yes, that's exactly the approach.
You know, and it's all to benefit the citizens, too. I mean, like, We're not trying to benefit local governments or engineering firms.
Right. Exactly.
No, you have people who need to complete projects. You have folks who complete the projects, and that's the benefit of Floridians.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it certainly ensures Florida's future from the impacts of sea level rise, flooding, just the myriad of issues that we're dealing with. And especially when you start thinking about water, you know, Brett, you and I were in the same water world for a while.
Long time.
And it is the basis of our economy here in the state.
Yeah,
everything revolves around what happens with our water.
Well, Pepper, FSBBA has a longer pedigree, if you will. But for those who are unfamiliar, tell our listeners a little bit about your organization and what it does.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. So, yeah, we've been around since 1957, if you can believe it. It was started in the southeast of Florida with a bunch of counties. You might imagine, you know, the Browards, the Dades, some cities thrown in there that were concerned about the erosive effects of the beaches washing away. So they had the foresight to go ahead and create this kind of local little association that turned out to be FSBPA. And so we're going to be celebrating our 67th year. We've held a policy conference every year since inception, including during the COVID years. We have a two-part mission. We're a league of cities and counties that care about coastal and beach issues.
Talk about your membership. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned some of the local communities, because that's huge, right?
Yeah. But
talk about some of that membership there.
Yeah, I mean, we're every single local beach county is a member, and then many, many cities within. So it's really designed around just the economy of beaches and how important they are to Florida and really what they mean. I just gave an interview to Action News Jax about the St. Augustine Pier that is over sand and not water right now. And that's all part of the plan, right? But the reporter really asked me, like, what is it about Florida? Why should we care about these issues? And I just, my off-the-cuff response was, just imagine Florida without a beach. Like, truly, what would that mean? Makes up so much part of our economy from both a statewide perspective and these local economies that are wholly reliant in many cases on their beach. I mean, just great return on investment from the state of Florida's investment on beaches. And they're categorized as infrastructure projects, and they truly are. They protect upland structures and infrastructure. They're flood control projects at their heart. We also need to make sure that really we're taking the environment into consideration, because they provide a ton of habitat for endangered and threatened species. So it's this kind of two-part mission of protection and advocacy. So, yeah, that's what we've been doing for a long time. I'm thrilled to be a part of it. When I came in, I kind of elevated the environmental side a bit more. And then, of course, being at the literally the founding moments of Resiliency Florida, I knew this whole resilience train was coming down the track. We started those conversations back in 2015, formally formed Resiliency Florida in 2016, like I said, right here in your office, Brett. And so we knew this was coming. And so I wanted to make sure I kind of combined all the professional aspects of my life. So I was lucky to be a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, do you find that to be kind of a culmination for you then? Because you spent, I mean, you had time in the Senate, you've had time with us here, yeah, and dealing with Resiliency Florida, and then now where you are. I mean, because I think a lot of people, when they think of shores and beaches, they're thinking, okay, you come in and bring a bunch of new sand when, you know, a storm comes in and washes it away. And there's some of that. But it does go deeper into some of the things that you worked on for years, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we do field those questions from reporters and from others that we're just putting sand out there to wash away. But these are our frontline defenses.
Yeah.
Literally for like everything that's happening upland of that, these are the front line. I mean, they're called sacrificial for a reason. They truly are. When a storm comes in, you could either lose a whole bunch of houses or condos, or you could lose a beach and dune, yeah, right? I mean, so the choice is pretty stark and obvious when you think about it in those terms.
Gives whole new meaning to the word armoring. For sure.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, well, let's talk a little bit about the conference itself. First things first, when is it? Where is it? Minor details that you'd like to share with our listeners.
Love to share it. So it is going to be at the Hyatt Regency Coconut Point, September 11th through the 13th.
So how did the idea, I mean, obviously you were here in this room 9 years ago, Florida Resilient Florida, take shape. Why the conference? Why did you both think that was a good idea to not, I'm sure, to educate, number one, but it's, as I know from experience, it's a little daunting to put on a conference. So what was the thinking behind that?
Well, we're not at 1,400 people yet, I'll add that.
You will be.
But the thinking really was, so when I got to beaches, I knew this resilience train was leaving the tracks, right? It was getting ready to depart. And we've been doing resilience for a long time in beaches, but we've been calling it nourishment. Hmm. It's effectively a resilience project. These are resilience projects all over the state. So when I stepped back and I kind of evaluated, what are the needs in Florida that we are not addressing right now? And through my work with Anfield and Resiliency Florida, I knew there was a big void here that was kind of this tidal wave that was going to crash upon us if we didn't do anything about it. So when I got to the Beaches Association, and we've been holding a successful policy conference for over 60 years, I thought, we can no longer be siloed. Like, we cannot address these coming issues system by system. We have to look at them more holistically. And with beaches being at the front lines, and then Resiliency Florida dealing with coast and inland, I thought, well, this is a perfect opportunity for us to expand and evolve what we do to make it more relevant to the next 100 years or next 70 years as it may be.
Well, that's so much goes right into, well, how do you do this? Mm-hmm. Which is, everybody has to do their part. It's a true partnership between our organizations to do this conference, but it's also a partnership with the public to be resilient and to, I mean, it's their money. They're paying taxes. Yeah. That goes into grants. It goes into beach renourishment. It goes into vulnerability assessments and planning. And so everybody has to do their part and be willing to kind of take up the flag, if you will, and bear the flag. So I think it's a great partnership.
You know, and the idea is, when we're spending public dollars, right, we need to be really wise with how we're spending them. And so our idea is to make sure that every dollar spent is a resilient dollar. Can it work in more fashions than just it was designed to do, to be mm-hmm. more resilient at any given time? And so that's kind of the mission now in how to dole out and be responsible stewards of the public funds.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it seems like that's where things are going. It's like all four spend a fair amount of time in the Capitol, especially during session. And a lot of these things are moving forward. Resiliency dollars, you've got money for vulnerability assessments and also the implementation side of things. When you just look at that small kind of nucleus of what's going on. And I want to get to the curriculum side of that, because I think it speaks to the broader view of what you're looking at. Because a lot of people are still, myself included, engineering, consulting firms, local governments, people in general, the scientific community want to understand is like, how do I fit all of this together into one coherent package? And I think it's really interesting that you are feeling this huge need in that sense, by way of not just your work in general, which is good in and of itself, is like, but the conference itself. I want to talk about that curriculum because I think it shines a light on that. And so talk to me a little bit about the tracks and how they work, because there's a lot here.
So we've got four tracks. One is the beaches track. So that's where Pepper's traditional, his organization's traditional beach management comes in. Mm-hmm. We've got an energy track sponsored by Florida Power and Light. We have a smart planning track sponsored by WSP and an infrastructure track sponsored by Atkins Realis. So we try to weave all of them together because there is commonality among all four tracks. We took abstracts. We got, I think, 95.
Yeah, almost 100.
There were quite a few folks that sent in some great project proposals and presentation proposals. So you're going to see what communities are doing across the state and even from out of state in some cases. There are also folks from academia. I think we had at least four universities put in some papers, not only Florida universities, but Clemson, I believe. We had a paper come in from Clemson. Mm-hmm. And
agencies,
then
don't forget about the agencies.
Agencies. So you're going to have the Army Corps, the DEP folks, you'll have Wes Brooks, the State Resilience Officer, FDOT, FWC. So there's going to be someone there from the Tom Frazier's coming in from the Flood Hub, used to be the state scientist. So, and then there's going to be a lot of the state climatologists mm-hmm. will be there. Also, just a myriad of private companies, in addition to the sponsors, giving examples of things that have been done or are being worked on. The primary purpose of the conference, though, is to build on itself year after year. So it's real-time solutions, but also how are we innovating and what's coming next? So there's going to be a little bit of all of that. Pepper, you want to add to that?
I think you nailed it, although I'd be remiss to say our other track sponsor is Sea and Shoreline, who Brett's intimately familiar with.
I am indeed.
Yeah, and we have another high-level sponsor that's going to be doing the reception, so I hope everyone comes and enjoys that.
Am I missing it? I mean, there's some that seems like you have these panels, which I love a good panel because you get that interplay between folks. But a lot of it seems to facsimilate a bit of a typical academic conference in that people produce a paper, and then you come and you present your paper. And usually it's, hey, we got these very narrow windows in terms of these conferences and what they deal with. This one seems to have broadened that scope a little bit. Am I missing that? Does that sound about...
No, you hit it. The idea is for us to create novel solutions to our pressing issues, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the whole point of this conference in the resilience space. So we do request abstracts, and Ryan, you said earlier about people, it's a good problem to have, it's like too many people. We're getting to the point where we're probably going to have to expand the conference because we're getting so many amazing abstracts that we actually have to turn away because it's just not enough time in order for us to get them. We turned away about half of our abstracts this year, and just some really amazing. But the whole idea is to focus on how the policy development now will lead us to the future. We have to do things right now that in Florida won't pay dividends for 30 or 50 years. That's hard to do in this political climate. I mean, I think we're all familiar with term limits and what they mean now, because oftentimes you're being elected and at the same time you're almost like running for leadership in some of these races. And it's hard then to translate that limited time that you have in the legislature to make good policy that's not going to pay dividends while you're in there, right? But it's going to be super important for the state of Florida in the way of life, in the way that we do business here, in the way that we protect our natural treasures. And so it has to be done. And so this is our opportunity to do it. In the resilience space, this is our opportunity to do it in Florida.
So we sit here mid-August or so, and we're about a month away from the conference or so. Maybe by the time this comes out, a couple weeks, there'd still be time to register, right? Where can folks do that if they want to?
So you can go to floridaresilienceconference.org, O-R-G, and register. It's a pretty reasonable conference rate. The hotel is going to be a different story. I know, Ryan, you and I were talking about that, about hotel rooms and how to manage that. As I speak, we're probably, the room block's probably, if it's not filled up, it's within rooms, like, of being filled up. So
there's VRBO still be, and Airbnb.
Yeah, yeah, no,
fine organizations.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of Hilton and Hyatt properties down there that are close enough. But things I never thought I was going to deal with coming as an environmental policy attorney was dealing with how much a buffet is going to cost and how many rooms and attrition rates are we going to have to figure out. But here I am, and it's all for a good purpose.
Speaking
right?
my yeah. love language.
Yeah.
So it's going to be my first year going. And so, look, I'm going to come right out with it. It's like, I'm wondering if we've got these four tracks, they're completely full. It's like, can you jump across tracks? And keep in mind, I'm asking that as a form of a question only out of like a societal obligation, not because I'm not going to just jump tracks anyway. But how does that mean? Can people just do whatever they're going to do, jump between the classes? You don't have to, you're not beholden to, say, the energy track just because.
We don't bar the doors, right, if that's what you're asking.
You can move around.
I don't know what kind of show you're running, so we'll find.
You can move around, but they're all going to be really interesting. So it's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
It's going to be very difficult for people to decide where they want to go, I think.
Yeah.
And I mean, part of the good problem that we have in the way that we set up this conference with the tracks, the four specific tracks, is they're interconnected, right? That's the whole idea, is to take advantage of this interconnectivity and address that instead of just looking at your very myopic viewpoint. Yeah, so there's going to be things that you're like, wow, I really want to be there, but I really want to be here. Mm-hmm. But all the people's contact information is published, and we put the presentations that we have, that we get, we post them online. And so there will be plenty of opportunities. Plus, there is a ton of networking opportunities built in. So if you missed a presentation, find that person and go find them at the bar or at one of the receptions. And speaking of the reception on Thursday night, that's going to be sponsored by Live Wildly, you know, and they're the corridor folks. And that's also tied to resilience in terms of climate change and how land and water and people all connect. And one thing that's unique about our conference is that we take Thursday afternoon off. And so you need to do some work, want to spend some time with family. Because remember, this was a beaches conference originally, right? So we had a lot of families coming there to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
So we allowed Thursday afternoon off for whatever activity you wanted. Find somebody, talk to them. There's going to be plenty of opportunities.
That's great. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to going to it. David Rathke?
Yes,
Pepperuccino,
sir.
Thanks so much for not just the work that you're doing, but also for creating a venue like the Resilience Conference as a place for like these real conversations on how to move forward. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been our pleasure. And I have to say thank you to Marco for showing us the way on how to do this, because
very much so.
You really are leading the way on this type of conference and how important it is to, I mean, it's the place to be, let's be honest, right? You don't even say what it is anymore. You just say, are you going to Marco? You know what I mean? Everybody knows what you're talking about. So thanks for leading the way and letting us ride along for the ride.
I'm just a hanger on.
we
all have Chuck Littlejohn to thank.
Yeah, that's true.
And on that well-deserved note, that's all the time we have for this episode. Thanks for listening to Specifier Podcast. Production of this podcast is by Carl Soren and David Barfield at Lonely Fox Studios. A special thank you goes out to Bagels and Biscuits, who were kind enough to let us use their music for the show. Check them out wherever you get your music.
And if you have an idea for an article for the Florida Specifier or a topic for this podcast, please be sure to let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Join us next time as we continue to delve into the issues, policy, and people that environmental professionals and policymakers want to know about. And that's it. For conference panel enthusiast Brett Cyphers, I'm Ryan Matthews. We'll see you next time.